Electrician Live with your host, Paul Abernathy and Jay Brunberg.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Electrician Live, where we talk about all things in the electrical industry. My name is Paul Abernathy, one of your hosts, and with me, as always, my co-host, the Basement King himself, Mr. Jay Grunberg. Mr. Grunberg, as always, welcome to the show.
Well, hey, man, happy, what day is it? Thursday.
No, it's not Thursday. It's Electrician Live Thursday, Jay. Come on now.
It's Electrician Live Thursday. You know, it's crazy because when you have a holiday that's on Monday, like we had one with a 3-day weekend, doesn't it just throw your schedule like wonky?
Yeah, it does throw it off. But man. I love it. Yeah, I love a 3-week weekend and I love a short week. That's what I'm talking about. Right. Although they go by very quickly. Very quickly these days, so it's just like pew, 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 definitely. So, Mr. Grunberg, how's everything with you, Colorado up there? I guess the weather's nice up in Colorado. You're probably close to your addition being done. All this kind of stuff. How's it going? Tell me what's going on in your world. Let everybody know that our listeners out there over on the podcast. Hope you're listening over on the podcast, electricianlive.com, and here on the live stream on the YouTube channel. Tell us how your week's gone, Jay.
Yeah, this week has actually gone really, really well. You know, we did have the Monday off, so again, jobs get pushed out a little bit, like always, on the contractor side, but we are knocking them out. The newer guys are starting to catch on a little quicker now, so we're seeing progress with those guys. Awesome. You know, we had our monthly meeting with the fellas, and so what we do is we do a Skype over the phone, maybe like a 7 or 8 o'clock. That way the guys can have dinner, and we tell them, hey man, it's just gonna be a half hour, maybe 45 minutes. We're gonna go over, you know, some good things, some areas where we can improve in, and just you know, have that good communication, especially with the lead guys. So we did that this week.
Sweet.
Which turned out really good. Yep. The addition's cruising, and yeah man, it's sunny and it's a beautiful day.
There you go. So well, that's awesome. Well, our week has been about the same as it always is. You know, we had a great record. Electrocode Academy had a great record-setting month. I think that every month we keep setting records. So we're thankful. And so to me, it's one of those things that tells me that people want to get educated. So I'm always excited about that. So before we start today and get into topics tonight, Jay, we're going to have to mention our sponsor. Again, of course, we are still sponsored by the CBD Pure. You can go over to electricianlive.com, scroll down in the episode. You'll see the link for that if you're interested in your CBD oils, creams, or what have you to help whatever ails you. And I can confirm, Jay, that my son passed a drug test even though he was taking CBD. Now, there's a lot of stuff out on the internet, and I guess it all depends on how much of your THC is supposed to be 0.03, whatever. But anyway, he religiously does the CBD, and he obviously did okay. So that's good news. That would suck, if you know. But I heard stories of people losing their jobs because they came back, because they don't test for THC. They test for byproducts. And there are some CBD, since it's not really regulated really well, that could cause some traces to come up. And if somebody in your job gets back a failed drug report, they're not going to, you can't look at them and go, it was CBD. They're going to go, sure, whatever. And they can you know, Texas, it's still illegal. And if you fail a drug test, buddy, they'll, you know, wherever you work or something, they go crazy. But good news, he passed a drug test, and I know he does CBD all the time. So maybe he got some good CBD, some actual compliant CBD. So anyway, let's run a commercial. And then we'll get into tonight's show. Nope, that wasn't the commercial, but that was a... I like that. Let me run a commercial.
Okay,
today's
show back to the
sponsored by electricianpride.com. your one-stop shop for electrician-specific t-shirts, hoodies, phone cases, mugs, die-cut stickers, leggings, and so much more. Featuring unique designs for electricians, journeymen, and master electricians, as well as electrical engineers and electrical inspectors. For more information on all the products that are available, visit us at www.electricianpride.com today. All right, and if you have not been to Electrician Pride lately, you will notice that it is all new, all revamped. It is got everything up there. It's duffel bags, polo shirts, long sleeve tees, short sleeve tees, hats, pet products. It even has a baby onesie, courtesy of Grunberg. So we have a bunch of stuff up there. If you get a chance, go look at electricianpride.com. We appreciate the patronage. All right.
Well, hey, before we get into the show, I do notice your logo is different. Would you like to explain that one a little bit? Because that's pretty. Is that Zeus?
That's the logo that we. That's the latest logo that we have for master electricians and journeyman electricians. It's called I call that series Gods of Current.
Gods of Current.
Gods of Current. So in one hand, he's holding a lightning bolt. In the other hand, he's holding a screwdriver. So that is our latest, and that's available on embroidery on our shirts and jackets, pullovers, as well as it's screen printed. It's also available on all of our other products as well. And the duffel bags, neat duffel bags, carry all your meters and stuff like that. Check it out. Yep. It's on the website. So it's cool stuff. But yeah, that's one of our latest designs there. Thank you for pointing that out.
Oh, that's a game changer right there, man. That's pretty sweet.
He's cool. He's cool. Everybody likes the Skull Mafia, but you know, Zeus is, you know, still pretty cool.
Zeus is Zeus. Let's Zeus hit the room, man. Elwood, what's up?
Yep,
Los Trace, what's happening? Looks like we got Alex Martinez throwing up the deuces. What's here up, O?
Got Tim. Going, Tim Johnson, Code Strong in the house. Code Strong, oh, Eric, boy, man,
some good guys already.
The house is full. Cool. All right. Well, thank y'all for joining us, and I do have some streamers over on our I guess it would be our Facebook stream because I am streaming to Facebook as well. But still haven't figured how the comment thing doesn't work, so I can't comment back to those folks yet. So. I wish XSplit would figure that out. It's the streaming software that I use, but oh well. We have all our YouTube, and of course, I also want to mention everybody that listens over on our podcast. Again, you can always listen to all the podcasts of all the old shows going back quite a while back over on, God, what was it, Jay? I have episodes on all different kinds of things. Probably, I think you could listen for, what was it, over 350 hours and never listen to the same show. There's just a lot of content through there through the years. So go check that out. It's also available on Master the NEC as well as Electrician Live, where we have the updates about the shows. So with that said, Jay, what's our topic tonight? What are we talking about tonight? I think what we're talking about, well, what are we talking about?
We're going to go over the standards development process. Pretty much we're going to explain step 1 through 4.
Okay.
On the development process of how to get inputs into the NEC, I believe.
Yes. So the development of the National Electrical Code. You know, the body who oversees the National Electrical Code, which are all you guys, everybody out there, guys and gals out there, is National Fire Protection Association. Great organization, Quincy. Massachusetts, kind of oversee it, and a great bunch of folks there. They're the ones that are kind of the overseers of the process, make sure the process, but it's very much has a lot to do with individuals like yourself, some of us that serve on code panels at the, you know, it's a commitment that people that serve on code panels give up of their time to be a part of that process. But we really rely on the public to bring all of those public inputs and public comments and things like that together. And then we massage it as necessary and, you'll vet things out. But we're kind of going to look at the process a little bit, courtesy of NFPA's website, So again, we'll say up front, we are not endorsed or a part of NFPA or the NEC. We are not making any statements for NFPA or the NEC or anybody on any code-making panel. I serve on a code panel, two code panels, but I'm not speaking or making any impression to anybody that it's the purview of the panel of anything I say. I serve on code-making panel 5 and code-making panel 17, so nothing I would mention here would be anything that would be speaking for that panel. We're just talking about the development process, okay? So let's make this clear tonight before we get involved in that.
All right. Which this process is actually something that a lot of us contractors and apprentices, we don't understand this. You know, before you and I were chatting about this maybe 6 months ago, about the 2020 edition coming out, and then what you and I were going to submit in the 2023, which I don't think I ever did, but I know you did. Mm-hmm. We didn't understand this. You know, if you were to say, hey, Jay, your word matters in the NEC, I'd be like, ah, get out of here. You know, those guys are labeled from, you know, panel one all the way to, I don't know how many there is, a bunch of smart guys. You guys are the ones who make it up. So, but in reality, what you're saying is, it's really in our hands.
It really takes the expertise of the people out there. I mean, we have on a code panel, you have a makeup of individuals, and they usually have to represent some organization or some association. I can't, as an electrician, just go and be on a code panel. For example, I represent Aluminum Association and Copper Development on two different committees because the company that I work for has a seat. On, you know, or we have a seat in Copper Development or Copper or the Aluminum Association. So we have a representation on that committee, but we also serve as experts that can contribute to that committee when we're vetting out the various public inputs that come from the general public, like yourself, who want to submit. And of course, we also do that as code panel members. We can put in our own public inputs the same way that y'all do it, same way that everybody else does it. We don't just sit around at the table and go, you know, blah, 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 this, 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 and we're going to create stuff today on a whim. Although, if we have something and we're at the table, then we can bring it up and discuss it, right? But at the end of the day, it's not, you know, it's not like we're just a good old boy sitting in a room and all of a sudden we're going to sit here and change the code. So let's talk about that before we look at the process. Let's talk about this, because I get a lot of emails from people all over the country who will email me and say, this code sucks, this code sucks, this code sucks, I don't like this. And you've heard me say it, I don't like what some things are doing, you know, that I still don't agree with, right? But I follow it because it is a minimum safety standard. Now, there's people out there who hate that term. They literally hate it when you say minimum safety standard. But if you think about it, what have we always said? You can go above and beyond code, but you have to meet the minimums. So it is a minimum safety standard. When you follow this document right here, this document, you have what's considered the minimalist, safest structure or building that you can have. Can you go beyond this? Absolutely. Just so that you don't go too far that you end up turning a 180 and end up making it not compliant. That can happen a lot in grounding and bonding. People go really think they got the best intentions in the world, and then all of a sudden they turn it from a unsafe to a safe to back to an unsafe installation, all because they think they're doing something better, and it's really not better. So it's important to understand that it's a minimum, but you can always go above the minimum. But it is, you have to meet it. So that is a minimum criteria. And that's what your inspectors are going to inspect on, or they should expect inspect on the minimum criteria, right? So that's where we should be when we're doing all this. Now, with that said, I have people all the time that contact me and say, Paul, we have to change this and this, and it's important to understand the process and that you can dislike something in the code, but you have to follow it. You have to follow it, whether you agree to it or not. You have to realize it has been vetted out, that you have to follow it. Now, the one thing about it, you do have local states that will amend things, modify things, take things away, like we talked about last week, Texas, who I think's making a poor decision, but they're making a decision, and electricians will follow the rule. And that was to remove the GFCI requirement for outlets outside. We're not talking receptacles. We're talking outlets, point of attachment, where you take power from a certain location. It could have a receptacle device in it, or it could be just something you hardwire from it, still an outlet. Outside would require GFCI protection, you know, loosely, and we're talking 210 dot 8, and I believe it's E, I guess. But at the end of the day, they took that out temporarily because of compatibility issues with the HVAC. Okay.
210.8F.
F. Okay. So they took that out. All right. So they can do that. The state can do that. Jurisdictions can do that. Things like that. That's fine. So that's something that they're altering. But if there's something that you truly do not like, you have to be a part of the process. We have a process, and it is so easy. You get a free NFPA account. Just go to nfpa.org. A great organization. Jim Pauley, who runs that. I know Jim, great guy, back when he was with NEMA. And wasn't with NEMA, but was part of one of the manufacturers that were members of NEMA, and that's where I got to see him early on in my career, and always looked up to him. Great, great guy. Has the interest at heart for the manufacturers. So to see him go to NFPA was a great. That type of thing. But they really do care about safety, and it's not just about selling books. That's a, you know, that's just part of the process to get the stuff out there. But really, who writes the NEC? Is people out there who know things are wrong or things that need to be changed or have some experiences or realize there's a safety concern that's not being addressed? We have a process that you follow, and you can do this by simply getting a free account at nfpa.org. It's free. Most people don't know that you can actually look at all the codes online for free at nfpa.org. Okay, they're free to see. You can't copy them, you can't print them, but they're free to look at them. And they won't have any things like the highlights and all. It's just the code. And they make that available to people. I think that's great that NFPA does that. Okay. But the key here is if there's something you don't like in the code, you got to be a part of the process. You can gripe about it, whatever you want, but if you're just a Monday morning quarterback about it, then you just might as well just shut up because it does no good. Just follow what the code is, but prepare to put a public input when it gets to that stage. Okay. So with that said, everybody is involved. It used to be in the back of the code book. You go back there, and it might still be here. Let me look. So this is a 2020. And if I go to the back of the code book, let's see if there's still the papers in there anymore, because everything's gone online now. Let's see if it's still in here to be able to submit a public input. Also, I should tell you, if you ever wonder, we're going to talk about tonight, but if you ever wonder how the code development process works, in the very back of the NEC is a very detailed, because on the podcast, you can't see this. But in the very back of your NEC, okay, it is a very detailed process of how this works. From every step, technical committees, first draft, second draft, technical meeting, all this kind of stuff is all back here. Submitting public inputs. It even gives you a step-by-step process in the back of your NEC. Have you ever looked at the back pages of your NEC? And I'm not just talking about looking at the index because you're taking or preparing for an exam. I mean, actually look at it. It gives you a process for submitting a public input, process for submitting a public comment, and it kind of just talks about all of the steps along the way. So again, it has individual sequences. It tells you the sequence and all that kind of stuff, which kind of something if you're getting in the code development process. So tonight, since we don't have a lot of time, we've got our normal show, I'm just going to give you an overview of the process and then give you my experiences through the process so that you have a better understanding. Now, Anthony in here says the style manual. Really not part of the development process in this stage of it. Obviously, those that develop it or writing a public input, for example, needs to understand the concept of the manual of style, which is put out by NFPA. Okay, so that's put out by the NFPA governing bodies or the committees, and they'll put that out. And it's kind of a process that we follow when it comes to the language and how we draft a code. But even if you send in a public input, And we'll talk about those details in a second. But even if you send one in, it's the code development committees, the code making panel, and everybody that's involved in this process will make sure that the information from the manual of style is actually followed and before it actually gets published. Okay. That doesn't mean that little things can't, you know, slip in here or there or something, or sometimes we'll have different amendments that have to be made and things like that that have to be done, right? So, and any erratas that need to be written and things like that. But anyway, let's kind of, so Jay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to kind of go to a screenshot away. Okay. And you should see it as well, and we'll kind of look at it. So if you can monitor, and Moyes asked the difference between TC cable and SCR cable. Okay, wow. Not really the show for that tonight, but let's go on and go to the screenshot. All right, so what you're seeing here is kind of what, you know, and Jay, you got any questions that you see in the chat and you want to bring up, you can bring up if they're germane to the topic. But what we see here on the screen is this is basically a four-step process. But I'll kind of walk you through. Currently right now, we are in the process of the 2023 National Electrical Code, okay? Now, for those that are watching on the video, we're at the stage where we've actually gone through, okay, and we're getting the, we have not yet got to the first draft report posted yet. We've already done the ballots. So what happens first is you have what's called public input, okay? Now, public input is a process where the stakeholders, anybody that wants a process change in the code, you see something, you read it, you don't like it. However, I'll remind you, just submitting a public input because you don't like something in the code, I can tell you right now where that's going to be filed quickly over in the trash bin. Okay, you have to substantiate your submittal. We understand there's certain things in the code people don't like. I get it. You know, we understand that people might say, oh, there's GFCIs everywhere. I don't think they work. AFCIs, I don't think they work. Or I don't think, it doesn't matter what you think when you're just thinking it, okay? It matters what you get involved, and if you submit something, that you can't just say, well, you know what, I think it's BS that we have GFCIs in a bathroom, yeah, whatever. You know where it's going to be filed if you submit it? In the trash. I'm just being honest with you. And our version of that is where we reject it. That's a version of putting it in the trash. We just reject it. It's dead. Right. And the reason for that is because you didn't substantiate it. I mean, you just gave your, you just don't like something, right? So that doesn't really matter. You have to substantiate it. So the public input is the opportunity. Now that comes open and everybody wants to know, can I just submit something at any time? No. So public input stage is when it opens up, and after the last edition is published, there'll be a certain amount of time before you actually they will open it up for the public input for the next edition. So the 2020 was published right before January of 2020, probably end of 2019 somewhere. Don't hold me to the numbers. And then after that was done, it went around. And then, of course, then after a while, the and I don't remember the numbers, the dates, the time frames. It's probably, I'm sure it's in the book. But then what happens is it opens it up to the public input stage. And so this is after people have, you know, gotten the 2020 and they've gotten to work with it a little bit, and they go, ooh, there's something in it that's wrong, or they missed something, or something's not right, or maybe an expert in an industry notices there's a deficiency somewhere and they want to submit a public input to change something, to make it better. We're always changing the code, not because we just have nothing better to do but change code. We're always changing the code because we learn new things, right? We learn how to improve things, how to make things safer, or maybe new technology gets introduced and the code doesn't have it in there and we need to incorporate that. So we're constantly looking for that change. So the public input can come from you, the electrician. It could come from manufacturers. It can come from codes and standards development people. It can come from any area of interest that one, a home inspector, Anybody could submit a public input into this process. And it's real easy. Get an NFPA account. You can do it right online. Okay. And once you submit that in, it comes in. And once you get to a closing date, and it means that all the public inputs get cut off, you can't submit anymore, then they get sent to those of us that are on the code making panel. Then we start having these meetings, and what we'll do is we each one will be broken into different groups because you can't look at them all. So we'll have different groups, maybe groups of three or groups of four, and a certain number of the public inputs will go to this group, certain number will go to that group, certain number will go to that group, and then we have a committee chair that's for each of the groups, and we'll debate over it, we'll look at it, we'll massage it, we'll bring relevance to it, we'll look at the data that was submitted, and then we'll vote on it. And then it's not voted yet by everybody in the group committee. It's just our little group. And then we bring it up and the chair will present it at the meeting, at the first draft meeting. And then they will say, these are the results of the votes of my group, okay, or my separate committee. Maybe we had 150 public inputs and that group had 150 and that group had 150. But we're all within the same code panel. Like say I'm in code panel 5. So we'll have it. So there's a bunch of them. So we break up the group. And once we come to the big meeting with all of us are together, then the chair will give their results from all of the individuals that that voted within that group. Now, once it's out there, there might have been an individual in another group that has an interest in something that we worked on. Well, this is their time to voice their concern and bring it up for open debate. And then after it's all done, that is where we come to conclusion on what we agree to and what we don't agree to and what we think's moving forward in the code. And then once that's done, it then has to go and we leave the meetings and we think we know where we're going to be and where we're, everything the way. The NFPA people that run these meetings are amazing. How they keep up, I have no idea when you got the banter in the room between all of us code guys and gals and these NFPA folks are just boom, 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 boom. And they're just doing amazing stuff. And I won't mention any names because I'll forget somebody and I don't want to offend anybody. They all are just, NFPA folks are wonderful. Okay, they really are. And what they do is they'll compile all this information. Okay, Jay, so then the next stage is all of us on the committees will now get these ballots that we have to vote on. Okay, and every committee has a principal and an alternate vote. So on code-making panel 5, which is Article 250 and 200, I am the principal. But on code-making panel 17, I'm the alternate. So I still vote, but my principal is the ones that vote that's going to carry. Okay? All right, so we'll get the ballot. It'll be emailed to us, and we'll get it, or we'll go get it from NFPA. You'll send it out to all of us on the code panel. And then we will vote. Okay? After review with our associations that we represent to make sure that we're voting in line with their, you know, their association that they, I mean, we're the experts, right? But we have to keep them involved because they're the reason we have the seat on the board, you know, a seat on the committees anyway. So we work together with them, but we have the, always want the best interest for the NEC. That's supposed to be the goal here. Now, after that's all done and we vote, and the votes come out, then the votes will be issued out, and then what's called the first draft report is actually posted. And that'll be what everything that we voted on, right? Now, here's where sometimes it can, there's a period in time where once that comes out, it's a matter of time before we get to stage two. So that was all part of stage one, right? Public input. First draft meeting to massage all of the public inputs that came in. People like yourself who wrote code changes comes in. Then we get together finally and vote on it. And then the ballots come out and we reaffirm our vote to make sure that everybody is still on the same page when we vote for the ballot. Because things could change between the meeting and the ballot stage. Something could change. Somebody's opinion could change, right? So once it's all balloted and then the first draft comes out, then it's published. And then stage two starts. Now, we haven't started stage two, and we actually haven't gotten to the first draft report posted, although it's up there, but I'm not sure whether it's posted to the public yet. It might be. But once we get to stage two, or step two, then there's a period of time where the general public, or us, anybody, could now comment on all the work that was done during that first step. Now, anything that was rejected during that first step, it's gone. It's over with. The public comment is basically commenting on what happened in the first draft stage, the very first stage of the public input. Okay, so you get this thing, Jay, this first draft report, you look at it, and you're like, oh, man, that code panel, they screwed, that's up. I'm an expert in this area, and we need to fix them, okay? And so you'll craft what's called a public comment. And your public comment is exactly how it sounds. It's a comment to the public input that made it into the first draft, okay? And it might have not, you might be the person that submitted the public input, Jay, but maybe the code panel twisted it all up because maybe you weren't really clear, but we thought we understood what you're saying, and maybe we massaged it to make it code language, meet the manual of style, and do everything. And now you're the expert, and you're looking at the comment, I mean, at the first draft posted, and you're looking at it going, that is not at all what I meant, or they've got that wrong. So now is your opportunity to send a public comment, and basically you're commenting on that first draft report for the work we've done. Now, here's a common misconception. You cannot, people think that you can submit stuff all the way up to the end. You can submit comments to what was done during the public input stage, but you can't submit new material. Okay? You're commenting
right
on what was the input, right?
Elwood has a question for you. He says, is it a courtroom style when you guys are sitting?
Hell yeah, we got judges and juries and you know, no.
That's what he imagines.
So what it looks like is, if you think about, we're in a big room. Well, no, I'll say the last year hasn't been that way. It's been all Zoom or Team or whatever meetings. But normally we're in a big room in a hotel. They have the different rooms, different blocks. And each code panel, so half of it will meet 1 week and the other half will meet the second week. And there's usually, you know, about 8 code panels meet 1 week and 8 codes the other week. We're in a room. It's just it could be a horseshoe table or it could be a square table. And we all sit around the table. And at the end of the table is the chairman. And then next to him is the individual from NFPA who's making all the notes. And the chairman will run. Our co-making panel 5, Scott Harding, did a wonderful job, masterful. It was his first time as chair this time. I know we were on Zoom, but I would have expected nothing less from Scott. He did just a wonderful job, masterful. I thought he did great. And he worked us through code panel 5. And basically, we're working. He's the one that leads us through. But he doesn't vote. His alternate can vote, but he does not vote. Because he's busy making sure that we get through all of the stuff that we need to do in the week that we're there. And we're talking hundreds and hundreds of public inputs that all of us around the table represent different organizations. So that's another misconception. You don't have just manufacturers sitting at the table. Okay. I know a lot of people think that. Yes, you have manufacturer representation, but there's also the inspecting industry's representation. There's the insurance industry's representation. There's jurisdictional representation. There's IAEI, International Association of Electrical Inspectors representation. There's NECA representation. Okay. There's IBEW representation. The committees that we sit on here for this development are not just eat up with manufacturers trying to push their products. Biggest misconception. Now, do some of them have more influence than others and can push their weight around? Absolutely. I'm not going to lie about that. We'd be fools if we tried to lie about that. But it's always a healthy balance in the room. And so, again, and many of us will speak out, even though we represent manufacturers. If it's not good for the NEC, then we'll speak out about it. We'll try to do the best that we can of our time. And then there's other people that say, well, you guys do this, y'all get paid to do this. We do not. We work for our companies. We get our normal salary like you would going out and doing your job. The difference is you do your job every day. We do our job, but we have to be away from family for a whole week. And then it means that the job that we work normally, that it sits there building up. Yeah, we're behind because we're doing this work. So, yeah. You know, and it's always easy for people to knock it if they've never done it. right? You've never sat and realized what the work that's involved on a code panel. It's so much, you know, think it's just, oh, I'll just sit there and vote. You have no clue. You really don't, if that's what your thought is of the process. So get involved in it. Try to get involved in the process or visit it, because there are open, Jay. Do you know that anybody can come to these meetings? Yeah, anybody can come. They're not closed door. It's a very transparent process. In fact, the NFPA's process, I can't stand ICC stuff. IRC, IBC, all that kind of stuff, the ICC development, that you can game that system. All you got to do is stay around late at night while they're voting and wait until everybody goes to sleep or whatever if they're running late, and then you just bring all the people in and start voting. You can game the system. You can't really game the system in any NFPA process. So the integrity of it is very high, and I've been doing this for quite a few years, and I know a lot of well-respected people that are in this process. So if you don't know how it works, it's actually a very dedicated process. All right, so anyway, that's kind of what it is. We're all in the same room, all around the table, and there's a chair at the table. You wouldn't know he's any different than anybody else, except we all know it's the chair. It's the chairman, and the chairman directs the meeting, okay? And we can debate back and forth over every public input that's presented, that type of thing. So now, once we're at the second stage, Jay, the public comment stage, you've given amount of time for you to vote. And again, all of you out there, heads up, because we're getting ready to start come into soon the public comment stage, where you're going to have to read the public inputs that were accepted in the first draft. And now there's something that you think can be tweaked or modified or changed or altered based on what made it through that stage. This is your opportunity. And that window of time will go until the comments closing date. Now, once that, and all this is available on NFPA's website, okay? It's all available on the website to be able to understand what the process and when it closes. Now, once it closes, then they'll all be, all of the public comments that came in through the online process will be given out in NFPA. NFPA will do their, what they always do, a great job of getting it out to us on the code panel. And then we'll have what's called a second draft meeting, which is very much like the first draft meeting. It's second draft is where we all get together again. And now we're going to look at all these public comments that came in. And remember, you're not introducing new material here. We're looking at what came in, the comments, based on what happened during the step one or the first stage. So we'll get the meeting, we'll get together, we'll debate over them. And of course, obviously the numbers will be less than it was for the public input, because that's just a massive amount of public inputs. And now we've weeded them down to things that made it past the first draft. And now the comments will come in on that first draft. And typically they're going to be less. There's less, okay, because we've already been through this once, okay? So that second draft meeting, we'll do the same thing. We'll all meet in a room. We'll separate into groups. And in those groups, because we're taking a bites at it, you know, we might, if there was 100 comments, then we would have four groups, and you'd handle 25, you handle 25, you handle 25, and you handle 25. It speeds up the time. And then you bring to us what your results were on what y'all voted on as a group. Your chairman of your group, or the committee, or whoever's leading that group, we'll bring it back, and then we come back to the main meeting, and the chairman will go, okay, so-and-so. If I was heading one of those groups, they'd go, okay, Paul, can you give us the outcome of your group's results? And then I would read the results of each of the public comments and say that we voted for this or we voted against this. And then once we go through this, it then opens up to the rest of the people in the committee that were on the other groups, because they might have an interest in something that was actually in our group but wasn't in their group. So they might have a comment on it. And so then we massage it out and we'll argue over it and everything like that. And then at the end of the day, we'll come to an agreement and a vote during the meeting. And NFPA will keep the tally of the numbers. And they'll take those numbers and something will appear to have passed or have failed, accepted or rejected, or modified in some way. And when we do that, it then gets documented and it all gets put together. And then finally, NFPA will send out to all of us on the committee our balloted second draft. And as I always say, opinions could change between the draft meeting and the results of our votes which aren't final yet. That's just us voting. That's not final. It's not final till after we get the ballots and we vote on the ballot. Again, I'm simplifying all this, not getting into the technical details of what we call the different things when we reject something or we accept something with some type of modification or something. I'm just trying to, or we create what's called a first revision based on any changes that we might make to a comment or a public draft or something. We're not talking about that. That gets really deeper than I want to get here in 1 hour. Yep. So we vote on the ballots. They get emailed to us. We vote on them. We submit them. And then they get collected at NFPA, and then they put out what's called the second draft report. So the second draft report comes out, and you might think, well, that's it then. I mean, you looked at it twice, right? You took the bite of the apple twice. All right? Well, if that's the case, and at that time, you'll have another period in there, right? And then you'll have what's called the NITMAM. Notice of intent to make a motion. And that means that there is something else that you didn't like or you didn't see that in there that needs to be fixed that wasn't fixed during the comment stage. It's still not right. Somebody goes, look, that was my public input. I told y'all what to change. You got it. You still didn't understand what I'm saying. I need to make a motion of intent to make a motion. And notice of intent to make a motion. And I need to clear this up. So at that point, we have another meeting. And the meeting is open to anybody to come. And they can come onto the floor and actually make a motion. And they can argue very passionately for something, or they can argue very passionately against something. And we go back and forth and back and forth, and it's all in one big conference room. So at this stage, it's not like it was before. We're in separate rooms. Now it's just one big convention hall, and everybody's in there, right? And everybody. And so anybody that submits NITMAM, we would vote on it at that time. And that's open to everybody in the room. Okay, able to vote. You know, we'll get you a little handheld thing. If you come in, they'll scan you, and you can vote. You'll get the thing to vote. Okay, so if that's the case, then we'll vote. And at that point, the NITMAM's received after whatever the results are of our meeting. And I would say the other path is if no public comments are received or no second revisions by committee are received, then it would go straight to consent. But that's never going to happen. It's never. Okay. It is always going to be a situation where we're going to have somebody's going to submit a NITMAM. So because there is a path here, as you can see on the screen, for those that are following on the video, it says if no NITMAMs are received or NITMAMs not certified, then it would go right to consent. But that's just not, I've never known that to happen. It's always going to be somebody submits a NITMAM and we end up having this meeting and we are going to discuss them. We'll meet on them. Everybody that's interested party can come there and vote on this. And again, it might be a last ditch effort to get something corrected or something like that to the last stage. Once we all vote on it, everything that passes or whatever's rejected at that stage based on the NITMAM, if something is rejected, it could go all the way back and revert to the previous code cycle because it's been pushed every step to change something in the code to this stage. And then we get to the very end and it might get tossed all the way about and it might revert back to whatever it was in a previous code cycle. So they totally just said everything that y'all did in step one, step two, don't worry about it. Go all the way back to the old previous edition. Okay, could wipe it all out. Okay, so that's it. You've really got three bites at the apple in that process. Now, once it gets to the NITMAM and we vote and it's received and then it gets certified. Okay, at that point, it comes down into step three. You have the NFPA technical meetings. The NFPA will have their meetings and look and take all the results from the NITMAMs, put it all together. And make sure everything's all the T's are crossed, all the I's are dotted, everything will be looked at. But as far as us that are on code panels, we're done at that point. We're done past the NITMAM past actually the second draft stage. We're pretty much done when it comes to meetings, that part of it. Right. And then once it gets past an NFPA, make sure then what it'll do, step four, council appeals and issuance of standards. So if anybody's got an appeal on a process or feel they were disenfranchised in the process or whatever, they can go to that stage, step four, argue their case, things like that. And if not, and everything looks in order, then they'll issue the standard and that's it. That's the last part of it. And then it goes on to publishing. And then once it publishes, then we wait and we start to wait, you know, 9-10 months, whatever it is. I can't remember the exact dates, you know, because I really don't follow it that closely. I'm on the committee. I know when they send me the notices to do what we do. But at that part, it'll start over again and we'll be working. And that's what we're doing for 2023. And once we're done with 2023, I guess it's about a year and it will sit back and relish in all the work that was done. And then we'll start to expect those emails to come to start it again. And we'll start looking at 2026 and putting together all that preliminary work that needs to be done. And then, of course, then it'll eventually open up for public input again. And hopefully we make the code better. Okay. So that was your 30,000 foot view of the process. But if you really want to get deep in the process, again, as I've told you, you just go to the NEC and go to the back of the book. And I'm telling you, they do a good job of talking about each stage, letting you know what the reports mean. Here, it even has the stages, like input stage one, technical committee holds first draft meeting, 23 weeks, technical committees with 10 weeks. I mean, it gives you all of the dates in here. So that's why I'm only giving you the 30,000 foot view. And I'm sure that somebody, we could have had a guest on here maybe from NFPA that could have gone deeper. But I don't know how much deeper you want to go, because you out there listening, you just need to be aware of the public input time frame and the public comment time frame. Get your public inputs in there if you think something needs to be changed or added to the NEC. Just make sure that you substantiate it, right? I mean, we want to make sure that you substantiate it. It's just, you just can't say, I don't want to do this because I just don't agree with something. You know what I'm saying? That type of thing.
Although that happens out in the field all the time. People, it happens out in the field all the time where people want to, kind of bash maybe the code language or a certain article or section. And
sure,
you know, again, they still have to install it per that requirement, but maybe they're just not happy about it. Well, guess what? Do a public input,
Do a public input but you need to substantiate it. You can't just submit something because you don't like it. You got to tell them why, and you got to be able to say, this is why. And this is why, that you should change the code. And Moise has made a comment in here. It says, I'm not sure what that word is.
I think it says that process in every state or a specific area.
So the National Electrical Code is done. This is the process for the NEC. What you do in your state is totally different. Totally different. Once this NEC is developed, it's up to your state to adopt it or enforce it. This is not a legal document by itself. Just the NEC isn't. It says right up in the very front. Okay. It has to be something that your jurisdiction will adopt or your state will adopt. And once they do, they'll expect it to be enforced. All right. But they can also amend it. They can also change things in it. And I'm a big person against all that, to be honest with you. I think that you should adopt the NEC as it is. And unless you're changing something that is jurisdictionally driven, not lessening the code, but jurisdictionally, maybe because you're super cold in a certain area or something like that, that you need to make modifications that adapt to the climate or the area. Other than that, safety is safety. It is what it is. So, but yeah, Texas does that. They amend. They have recommendations. They don't amend it. Texas adopts the NEC fully, right? But what happened is that they do what's called recommendations.
Okay.
To the jurisdictions to incorporate into their local rules. Okay. And once it's written, it's a rule. You want it to be written, not this unwritten rule. It's a written rule. Otherwise, you follow what's in the NEC. Okay. Kyle says that the first draft will actually be out July 2nd. Cool. So for all of you, For us, I've already started writing public comments because obviously I have access to the draft and I've seen it and I've read it. And there's certain things that I'm like, because you remember, I'm working on code panel 5 and 17, right? I don't know what's going on in these other panels, but I have other submittals to these panels. Now, luckily for me, I think of the 30 public inputs that I submitted, all of them passed or got put in there except for like a couple. And of course, the couple that didn't, they were what I call plants. We talked about that. I planted them because I wanted something else. So I planted that to get something else. So it's a, you know, and that's nothing wrong with that because both were issues, but sometimes that's the way to go. And I just learned to do that. Now, I couldn't do that in the committee. That wouldn't be right. I'd do that as anybody else. I submit a public input or public comment like anybody else. Okay. I don't wait until a committee meeting to do something like that. Okay. That wouldn't be above board for me to do that. Right.
So with you being on code making panel 5
5 and 17. Uh-huh.
5 and 17. So let's take 5 for example. Let's say are you allowed to do a public input on code making panel 5 since you sit on it?
Absolutely. I'm an electrician.
Okay. I didn't know if there was some type of like you can't do
to the meeting, right? We come to the meeting and first of all, one of the common things that we don't do in meetings is we don't call out people's names, right? We don't go, okay, we got public input 639. Oh, look, it's from Paul Abernathy over there. Hey, Paul, good deal. They don't do that. We read it as normal. If somebody wants to look at the names, now what they might go is say, well, you know, since this is Paul's public input, Paul's in the room. Does anybody have any questions about it, the technical merit of it? Paul's more than happy to talk about it, right? But what we don't allow is during the public input stage, we don't let the general public can come and listen. But if you're somebody who submitted a public input, you can't come into the room and say, oh, that's mine. Oh, y'all don't understand. Y'all don't understand. That's the quickest way to get you thrown out of the room. Okay. Now you might petition or you might send the chair a request a certain period of time before the meeting and ask to speak on your public input if you're passionate about it. And then at the chair's discretion, they will determine whether or not they'll let you speak. And the chairs will. They're great folks. The ones that do this, you got to remember, to chair a committee like this is a lot of commitment. And it shows you that they put the years in and the passion they have for it. So it's not to be taken lightly because it is a lot to take in, especially like I told you, Scott for 5, being the first time that he's ever chaired, although he's done this for a long time, he did a wonderful job, very masterful in how he did it, considering. And there was times when it got contentious between folks and pushing in, and he was able to reel it back in and keep his own opinions. I can't say that always happened in previous co-member panels on some of the others that I've been on, okay? But in this case, Scott did a great job at doing it and allowed everybody to say their piece. And just let everybody vote. But yeah, I can submit a public comment, public input, just like anybody. I'm an electrician, just anybody else. Just because I sit on the committee, got to remember that my vote's not going to carry the day. Just because that's my public input, I'm going to say, hey, guys, gals, y'all need to vote for this because y'all my brothers and sisters on this table. No. In fact, they look at you worse because if your public input is BS and it's not well-founded, then you embarrass yourself, right? Because you're supposedly, you know, somebody that's representing your industry and as an expert on these committees. And, you know, you don't want to embarrass yourself that way, right? And we have some sharp minds. I tell you, code making panel 5, everybody on there is just sharp as a tack. I tell you what, they're just great people. Really are. I mean, code panel 17 is great too, but by far, the folks, the enjoyment for me is co-making panel 5. I love nothing more than to hear people, Dalip and Phil Simmons and Sky. I mean, I love nothing more than to just hear that all of us banter back and forth. Christine Porter, super, super smart woman. Oh my God. And to be in the room with them and be able to been doing this for years now, bantering back and forth. It's just enjoy it. I really do enjoy the process. And to believe it or not, to see all of the public inputs that come out there from electricians all over the country that show that they're involved, and you can get involved too. And if something that you don't like, do it. You know, get involved in it. Definitely get involved in it. But again, that's kind of the overview of the process. Do you have any questions, Jay, on that? I mean, well, other than that?
No, not really on the process. I mean, I was just curious if you were allowed to put public inputs on one that you sit on, and you made you clarified that up. Elwood says, though, grounding and bonding are arguably the most important article. And I think it's the most, maybe the most important, but also the most misunderstood for those out there that maybe aren't like you and I, and we're not code nuts, I guess, you know. So if you're not in it a lot, it's just like picking up a Bible the first time.
The emails that I get and the different questions that people have is there's always this intermixing of grounding electrode conductors, equipment grounding conductors, supply side bonding jumpers in general, main bonding jumpers, system bonding jumpers, sized differently, uses different tables, the different processes, improper case to neutrals downstream, why you don't want to have the neutral connected to enclosure downstream, all these things people get confused with. We spent, as a code panel, we spent hours trying to define objectionable current. And we thought we had a good definition. But at the end of the day, there's certain areas in the code that would require a certain type of connection that inherently could create something that wouldn't have met our definition of objectionable current. So we, as a code panel, said we cannot put a definition in there, as much as we wanted one. We cannot put a definite in there that's going to contradict ourselves as a code panel in the principles that we're setting forth in Article 250. So we decided not to put a definition for objectionable current and leave that up to the interpretation of the installer and of the AHJ. Because we said, you know, originally it was objectionable current is current traveling on an unintended path. Well, there are certain rules in the code that will force us to do different types of things that might put current on what would be considered a path that would list it as objectionable current, which it not necessarily was objectionable current. And so nailing it down with a definition was tough. And we, as a panel, had to look at things like that and say, you know, that's not going to help the code. That's not going to help people understand it. So we just won't do it. That's what we do. And again, if you've never been involved in the process, I will tell you something neat you can do, guys. If you've never sat, these meetings that are open, even the Zoom ones, are open to anybody to come and listen. They can come listen, right? So you could have come and listened to that. And again, the public comment stage probably will not be meeting in person, I would think, because everybody's still a little bit paranoid. You can log in. You can listen to what's taking place. And you can kind of get a virtual about what happens, that type of thing, right? So, you know, it's just all different things that can take place. And so, you know, just great bunch of people. And I'm always blessed to be on the committees with those folks. So, absolutely.
Good. It's always good to work with people. Harley, Basement King is number one.
Number one. Hold on. I don't even have music for that. Hold on. What did I say?
Out of all the comments, that's the only one that really caught my eye.
That's the only one that caught you out. Elwood says, people make a living on 250. Yes, they do.
Oh, yeah.
Over the years, I've made a pretty good living on Article 250. So, you know, I've tried to explain to people. You know, when I got together with Phil Simmons, in case y'all don't know, Phil, if you don't know Phil, I don't know where you are, wake up. Phil is a great guy, and I got to work with him on the latest book from Cengage on grounding and bonding, which is the basis for our grounding and bonding course over at the Academy, is just amazing living institution of knowledge. I'd say he's been around since way back when I know Phil doesn't listen to the show, but I was going to say Phil's has been around since Moses parted the, you know, well, that wasn't, was it, who parted the Red Sea? It was Moses, right? So, Moses. So he's been around since, I used to always say he's been around since Medusa froze everybody into concrete. He's been around so long that he's been, you know, he was with IAEI. He was, I mean, he's seen it all. And I've got the, you know, it's all about shoulders you walk on in this industry. And I've been blessed to give knowledge to other people, but I've also been blessed with people like Phil, who is a friend of mine, to be able to gain wisdom from somebody like that. And, you know, that's why when I'm in a meeting somewhere, I just listen, Jay. Now listen, if I'm not the one teaching or in the meeting or I'm not the one speaking, and people would think this is hard to believe that Paul could ever shut his mouth. But in those meetings, I'm quiet. I know that's hard to believe. How hard is that to believe? I'm quiet.
That's a hard one.
Listening to what those individuals say and how they say it, you pick up so much. So that's the other reason why I do it. Obviously, we don't get paid for it. There's nothing in it. Do I care that my name is in the front of the code book? No, I joke about it, but I could care less. For me, it's what I get from being involved with those folks. You know, the relationships, the people, and it's been tough for the last year and a half that we haven't been able to get together because, again, it's just not the same on Zoom. Trust me, it's just not the same than being in the room with everybody. Okay.
Yeah. There's something about sitting down in that classroom environment and just really being able to take those breaks with those guys, you know, even pack a lunch and eat your lunch with those guys. And, you know, because you probably know their families and they know yours and you get caught up. You haven't seen each other for 3 years. And, you know, some guys that I used to work with before, I haven't seen those guys for 6 or 7 years. And they'll just call me out of the blue. Hey, let's go sit down and talk code or. It's always good to be around those people. But, yeah, Phil, he's on a lot of books. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's written a lot of books. And you...
He's a primary author for the residential, commercial, and grounding and bonding. And if you get those books, you'll see I'm in there because I helped him on those books do a couple chapters in each of the books. So, and then I was able to use that to help develop the courses that we do online. But, yeah... Was able to work with him over a year, very intimate, and I helped him on the other chapters, but those were the ones he wrote. We would banter about them, we would discuss it, we would talk about it, what we thought would be a good change for the book, because with Phil, he doesn't lay on his laurels. He could have taken those books and said, ooh, we'll just update the code stuff, and we'll just pass that book on another year and give you a book. And basically, it would be the same book with just code updates. That's not Phil. That is not Phil. When Phil dives into a book, it's almost like a rewrite. And I wasn't expecting that, and I got involved in it, and I was a little overwhelmed at first. I admit, Phil will tell you. But then I started to find the groove, and I realized what he was doing. And he just wants to make the books better. That's it. And his grounding and bonding book, now there's a book out there called SOARS. You probably all heard of it. SOARS, it's put out by AI. Phil... originally helped write that original book, but Phil's does his own. We did one now on grounding and bonding. It is laid out section by section. Whereas the SOARS book, no disrespect, but the SOARS book just goes all over the place. If you're looking at something and you want to find something on the requirements and you want to understand everything about equipment grounding conductors and 250.122, I want to be able to go to that area. SOARS can be confusing. Phil's book is not confusing. You go right to 250.122 and it starts to explain the process. And so you basically follows the flow of the NEC instead of jumping all around. So SOARS is a great book. I have it. But the one that I worked with Phil on is by far, to me, the best grounding and bonding. And I'm biased because I had a hand in it, but it is the best grounding and bonding book flat out. Go to Amazon and look for Phil Simmons' book, Grounding and Bonding by Cengage. It is the bomb. Or, of course, you could take our grounding and bonding course.
Do that too. I'll be taking that soon too as well.
That's right. You got it in the bundle pack. Jared's popping a lot of questions tonight. Like, I'm actually going to answer questions on Electrician Live here at the end of the show. Sorry, Jared. Not going to happen. Feel free to email me.
The guys an hour, maybe an hour and 10 or so. But, man, that's a good one, though. Jared, you can actually email that over, though. Was it host@electricianlive.com?
Yep. So, or you
and
can
anybody
go
can send us an email.
Yeah, absolutely. You can send send emails. And my example to this with Jared, I'll tell you, if you actually believe what you just typed, then and you think there should be a change in the NEC, that's a perfect opportunity for you to write a public input. It's too late now, though, because we're already going into stage two here. So, but that's a perfect opportunity for you to write it. But remember, you better substantiate it. Don't just say that you think that this is this. You better be able to substantiate it and be able to convey it and convince a committee. And on these committees, you're going to have 15 to 20 people. They're all very technical. And if they look at that and we can't make heads or tail because the maybe it's broken, it's not complete sentences, it's not easy to understand, then it's going to not, it has no chance. At all. Okay? At all. So
Jared might have his volume off. He's still rolling.
He's still rolling.
He's still rolling. He's still typing. Right. Bless his
heart. Yeah. So anyway, I guess that's gonna be it tonight. Jay, unless you have anything that you wanna bring up. We had a great show. We had a great last night study for the Fast Tracks program last night. We did series and parallels, and guess how long it went? I didn't pay attention. Over 3 hours just on parallels and series.
Are you serious?
I talked for 3 freaking hours on series and parallels. And what I tried to do is give them every possible scenario that they could run into. And before I knew it, we started at 7:30. And when I looked up, it was, what was it? After 10:30, 10:40 or something like that. I was like, oh man, we kind of went a long time, didn't we? So we did. So it was a long episode. If you want to know how to join us on the Wednesday nights, it's not open to the public. You can, in this YouTube channel, you can click join. And if you become a monthly subscriber for the general or the VIP, then in the common area or the community tab area, I post each week the link to the special Zoom chat. But you can only get there if you're a paid monthly member. It's kind of a perk for being a member. But if you're a Fast Track student, then you get access to it as well. And sometimes I think last night I went too far because there's no way it should take 3 hours to explain series and parallels. But I don't. I just kept wanting to keep going. And it was recorded, but it is not uploaded yet. I just got so much I got to catch up before I can upload it. That's the beauty of being live. Okay. The recording is a benefit. But being live is the deal with that there. So, and I didn't have Jay there to tell me to record it, but I remembered.
No, I don't know what happened. I don't even know if I searched through my invites and I, to be honest with you, man, I searched through my invites on Master and I'd seen the one from the following week on Ranges. So I really, and I know we talked about this, but I thought you took yesterday off, man. I was like, oh, maybe he said, but then I got to thinking, you know, 2 days before you were showing me the presentation and so.
And we were discussing it. So
yeah, we were, you had some great diagrams. You had some cool slideshow.
So always remember, that when we're going to have for those that are in the Fast Tracks, again, sorry, not part of Electrician Live, I guess, but for those that attend it, I always post it in the Fast Tracks at the Sparky Hub. I'll post it in there. If you're, again, a paid subscriber on our YouTube channel, I post it there. But over in the Sparky Hub, I also post it in the YouTube subscriber forum there as well. So that's three places that I post it. And then, of course, I also submit it. Jared, we're not going to talk about your situation tonight. That's too much, and we're at the end of the 1 hour, and we're talking code development episode tonight. Feel free to email those in to us if you want to email your situation in. But for me, every generator and what I deal with, generators usually have a grounded conductor because you need to get 120 or 240 out of it. So generally all of them from the generator to the ATS is going to have a grounded conductor. So typically when I run conductors from the ATS out to the generator, I'm still going to have two hots, a neutral, and an equipment ground. All right, those type of things. What we have to establish is the ATS, whether or not the ATS is actually switching the grounded conductor or not as it comes from the generator and from the premise to determine whether or not the generator is going to be a separately derived system or not. Okay, if it's not switching the neutral and it's a solidly connected neutral, then it's not separately derived. If it's switching it, it's switching a neutral, then the generator would be separately derived. And, of course, that has a lot of impacts on our grounding that we have to do at the generator. So, but I am not familiar. It kind of scrolled quickly, but I'm not familiar with a generator that you were talking about, I guess, a neutral that comes from the service required to do that in the code, right? But in a situation from a generator to an ATS, I would expect there, because all of the circuits within the building are going to be utilizing a neutral, I would expect to be deriving a neutral from that generator as well. So I'm not sure I understand the context of what you're asking, but I would expect a grounded neutral conductor to be run from the generator to the ATS. The question is whether or not they're switching the neutral or it's a solid neutral to determine whether or not that generator now is a separately derived system or not. And then that's going to play a big role in what my grounding scheme would be, whether it needs ground rods or whatnot or not. Okay, so again, I don't know if that answers your question, but feel free to email it in, and I'm more than happy to look at it. All right, kind of summarize that to the best I could remember seeing it as it was scrolling up the screen. But anything else, Jay? We appreciate everybody that joins us on the Electrician Live. Remember, if you have topics for a show, please let us know at hosts@electricianlive.com. You know, the best thing to do, Jay, really is to go over to electricianlive.com, and on there is a contact button. Click that contact button and fill it out right there on the site, electricianlive.com. You can fill it out, submit it, and it'll come to us. Okay. So that's the best way to do it. Okay. It's all integrated into the website. So check that out. You know, go over to the website, electricianlive.com, and, click the link to contact us and fill it out and send it, and we'll get it. But if you have recommendations for future shows, topics you want to talk about, things like that, let us know. Jay, what's our next one we're going to be talking about? What did we say it was going to be on? What did you say, laundry? What was our next one that we're going to be? I don't think it's posted, but it will be posted here in the next day.
Okay. No, we have a couple. We're actually going to do
I know we're going to continue our residential series, right?
Yeah, so we're going to do a residential where we talk about laundry areas and also, what is it, maybe exterior required
exterior
outlets,
requirements,
whether it's receptor, exterior requirements.
Lighting.
Because, again, laundry areas, you can do so much in them, but there, it is important to know, right?
Sure.
Same with the exterior. So we'll combine those two into one, and then I believe we have a fun episode where we actually get to kind of talk about how you train an apprentice up and how I train an apprentice up, or maybe how guys trained us up, you know, because I have some really good stories about getting beat down. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
But you know, they pulled me up. So.
Yeah. We have stories about what I used to do with my, you know, apprentices or helpers. Once I got them to a certain stage, it was time to let them sink or swim.
Yeah.
And so I would send them out there and say, okay, that's the bedroom. You know where the home run's got to go. Oh, and there's a master bath onto it. Okay. I need you to do all that, and I will check you and come get me when that home runs all the way back. And then they'll be working on that task, and I can focus on something else. So we'll have some great stories on that, and that helps them learn. But it also, if you delegate it well, you can really speed up the process in getting a house done if you delegate it. That way you're not doing everything yourself, or, you know, people think. So that'll be a fun show too. So that'll be fun.
That would be fun.
Yep. That would be cool. All right. Well, I think that's it, folks, for us tonight. Again, we appreciate all of you coming in and joining us, as always, each week. Make sure you check out electricianpride.com. Get some swag on. And, everybody have a great week. And, Jay, got the last parting message to everybody out there?
Yep. Have a good week. Stay safe. And we'll see you next Thursday.
There you go. Till next time, folks. Stay safe.
You're listening to Electrician Live with your host, Paul Abernathy and Jay Brunberg.